Of the Venetian Eastwood Show. AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Speaking of GorillaMedia.co.nz, we've got a couple of articles in here about the quake. I believe I'm the only host on AFR that's actually anywhere near the quake zone. We're not actually near the quake zone enough to feel it or anything. We're about 1,400 kilometres away, but that's close enough. My sister and her family are down there, and so are many of our listeners indeed, who have been sending me photos and chatting with me on Facebook. And I just had a call this morning from a previous guest on the show, Blair Anderson from Mild Greens, who will be coming on the show next week. I hope if we can suss out some description of connection for him. Now, the difficulty with this disaster is its magnitude, of course. I mean, the water pipes are broken, the internet is down in certain parts of the city. About 80% of the city is without power, and emergency services are scrambling everywhere. But the other elements which have not been discussed on the news whatsoever, to my knowledge, is the incidental things. For example, incidentally, a big pod of pilot whales washed up dead around the time of the earthquake. Incidentally, the Prime Minister, John Key, was giving an address to a panel of US basic dudes who have come over to say, well, you know, we need this Trans-Pacific Partnership so we can outsource all your jobs and work and destroy your entire country's infrastructure by buying it out and selling it off. But you know, conveniently, the infrastructure got destroyed by the earthquake, so they couldn't get their hands on it. And also, I offended somebody today who's decided to unfriend me on Facebook because, like many of the people in Christchurch who are sitting around having coffee and this morning and laughing, according to news reports, trying to make light of the situation, I too try to make light of the situation because I think that the Rolling Stones, for example, should come in and do a benefit concert called I Can't Get No Liquefaction. Dun, 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 dun. Maybe that's offensive. What do you think, Will? I think maybe it is. But still.
Well, I just think people should. I mean, there's a few suspicious circumstances surrounding this, like 9 congressmen leaving 2 hours prior, 9 US congressmen left 2 hours prior to this occurring, and then we have this HAARP-like facility. If anyone doesn't know what HAARP is, Google HAARP, Alaska, something that can ionize the atmosphere and cause weather systems, and then it bounces back off the ionosphere and hits the Earth and was used for ground penetrating radar purposes. It can cause quakes. And there's this facility just a few k's away from where the earthquake was placed.
And incidentally, the military was doing a big operation down there, so they were right on hand to help with the cleanup. A lot of coincidences. The conspiracy theorist in me gets suspicious, but who knows? It may just be a coincidence and genuine. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. And also just a wee tip there. The hits for both sites, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and GorillaMedia.co.nz, are climbing quite substantially, which I'm very glad to see. So if you are like two or three of the people that have contacted me in the last day, basically mentioning it to everybody you see, whether you're walking into Repco and talking with the people there or any other place you want, thank you, and thank you very much, because it's the only advertising we got. Now, speaking of advertising, one thing we like to do on the show is give plug play to Kiwis who get their stuff together to do a little bit of exposing of corruption and evil wickedry that we usually have in mass on this country's fabulous little islands. And on that note, we have a man coming at us live from the country's largest volcano, Taupo. Dario Ignacio joins us. Welcome to the show, mate.
Hi, Benny. How are you doing?
I'm borderlining on fabulous is my party line, so next election, vote fabulous. One thing I would like to ask about you, Dario. I mean, you've been involved in the court system, and we've had guests from the Freeman movement on this show, and our audience is probably well aware of the parameters of this. But one thing that I wanted to talk to you specifically about was your experience in the family court, because you've been having successes there where others have failed. But before that, I would love you to just give a little bit of background about yourself. How did you end up in New Zealand?
Well, after roaming around the planet for different reasons, studying and working and all sorts, and I decided that it was time to move to a place in the Pacific area. I had the view that the Pacific was an area full of different native tribes with different cultural views and basically with a pristine sort of idea about life, you know, regarding environmental issues and not really sucked into the same dependency that most of European countries have had for a very long time. So that was the major issue. And there were two main issues that I wanted to progress with in my life. One was the issue of having a simpler type of lifestyle. And the other one was to try to apply, to put into practice the option of homeschooling our daughter. So these were the two main things that they moved me to consider this region. At the time, it was Australia and New Zealand. To me, they looked pretty much the same. Obviously, from overseas, the perception is different. Over time, and coming here, I could understand that there are strong differences.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the cool thing, because the Australians have now sent across to us a lot of their emergency services to help out in the Christchurch quake, and I, as a Kiwi, am actually quite grateful for them. The difference between New Zealand and Australia, according to my brother, is Australia has a remarkably large amount more V8 Fords and Bogans driving them than New Zealand. It's like a nationwide West Auckland. I love it.
Yeah, well, maybe you're right.
Yeah, well, and moving on.
I don't know much about it, sorry.
Yeah. Don't worry. What was a good joke? Oh, yeah. What's the difference between Australians and cheese? And I don't want to offend our Australian listeners here, because I love you. You know I do. If you leave cheese in the desert for 200 years, it develops culture. But anyway, on to New Zealand, yeah. our fabulous prime ministerial dictatorship. One of the interesting parts about our legal system is one that's kind of like a cut above. It's called the family court. It's the only court in the land, or actually one of two courts in the land. I forget which the other one is, but no media is allowed in at any point whatsoever to report about what's going on in there. Could you explain to us a little bit about how you wound up dealing with the family court?
Well, basically, I think that my perception is supported by my experience and that of quite many people that I met over the last few years. And I think that the issue is that, unfortunately, there is a wrong perception of who our proper offspring, our sons and daughters are. So we start talking about all kinds of politically correct words, such as child. And then we fall into the traps of addressing issues that they concern our sons and daughters as if everything is commerce and as if they are chattels and as if we are fighting like cats and dogs for who ends up with a car. And I think that that is the main problem. So until mom and dad, hopefully both, or at least one of them realizes that they are not sitting at the bargaining table in order to negotiate some commercial agreement, then until that point in time, unfortunately, they fall prey to what I have many years ago renamed the anti-family court industry.
Yeah. I mean, this is what I commonly refer to as framing the debate. They love to frame the parameters of any debate, and they do so by employing their own language. And so they fill things with legal jargon to scare the average person, and it's just a big charade, basically run by, you know, $200,000 a year lawyers, and you know, the family court's biased, always biased towards the mother and or the state. It's the first bias.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a way. It's just a way of making it all professional, and but then they distance people from the fact that they're their actual kin, their actual children. They're talking about.
Yes, hi, Will. I think that you're absolutely right about that. My perception is that because we fall into the trap and we start arguing, we have the tendency instigated by the lawyers, of course, who, I mean, you say that they're professionals. If they're professionals, it's because they can profess something. And I do not know what they profess, because when I tested them, then I'm the one that knows what is written in the statutes and they don't. So my question to many of them was, well, why do I have to tell you what section applies? Aren't you supposed to be the one that is the family law expert? So we fall all the time into this type of trap that we go to them asking them to provide a service that they cannot provide. They are only there for commerce. They are only there to hook us onto a system and to bleed us to death, because the only thing that they can survive is in our energy. We are the ones that produce something. They are the ones that are sitting on the fence. They make claims. They put all kinds of accusations. They don't have any proof. It's all hearsay. It's all an empty shell. It's just smokes and mirrors. And the moment that you test these things with facts, not with opinions, and again, that requires from the mom or the dad to step out of that equation and stop arguing stupidly about the opinions and coming and saying, well, let's find the facts. And stop with all of this, you know, waste of time and energy, and obviously the tremendous damage that this causes to the children, because our kids, our offspring, our sons and daughters, they are the ones that they pay the ultimate price. They are the ones that they are deprived of seeing mom and dad coming together on a round table, you know, with a cup of tea, and seeing what is the best for everybody, not. No, it's like people, you know, people say, oh, yes, we do this in the best interest of the child. And I'm saying, hold on a second, let me see if I understand correctly what you're saying. Best is a superlative. Before a superlative comes in comparative, which is better. Now, do you know all the different options that they exist for my daughter specifically, or for my son specifically, or for my offspring in general terms specifically? So they said, well, no, we don't know all the options. So I said, well, if you don't know what is better, how can you claim that you know what is best? In a sense, so when you start talking about the linguistic thing that they throw on us, it's just ridiculous. The problem is that we focus more on, oh, my ex is an idiot, oh, because she says this, and we fail to understand.
You're too articulate for them for a start. That's the problem. You're too articulate for them. And so what the system does with people like yourself, Matt, is they either ask you to join and become a vampire and join the bloodsuckers, Or they want to get rid of you somehow and get you out of their hair and drag you through the mud and you know, run you broke or something. You know, because they just want the average member of the public just to be like, oh, is that right, Mr. Lawyer? Oh, I'll take out another loan. And like you said, they are bloodsuckers, because we have a fiat banking system, we have a fiat currency, but we also have fiat jobs. I mean, I've had real estate agents say to me, what do you do? What do you create? As if a real estate agent creates anything, as if a real estate agent adds anything to the real economy. The real economy is about 6% of the money exchanged. That is real work done, things being engineered, creation, building, construction, ideas, intellectual property. The real work is less than 6%. The rest is all speculation and middlemen and leeches.
But well, you know, and it's interesting that you use the term leech. It's interesting that you use the term leeches, because that was exactly what I was going to say, is because the fact of the matter is, when a leech needs to get nutrition for itself, it can't create anything. It literally has to find another creature that's healthy enough to sustain itself, to latch onto, to cut into it, to suck out all its vital juices that it works so hard to feed itself in order to create, you know? And then it just basically fills itself up, which as much as it can suck, as much as it can hold, in a greedy fashion, and then just drops off and then wriggles away to digest. You know,
I mean,
and
that reminds
that really, really does signify for me the real epitome of what a lawyer is in the family court sense of the word.
Yes, with all due respect, I think that there is a problem. We tend to make claims. We all. Unfortunately, we develop this tendency because we live in a very vicious system, and we judge everything by the measurement of whatever we can see. And that is exactly what the family court and all the other courts, they prey on. They expect you to come with your opinion. And then, of course, they come with another lawyer who only has hearsay opinion, and they say, well, between this opinion and that opinion, we will believe a mate from our team, the lawyer, the cop, whoever it is, because it's just opinion against opinion. And we have to learn how to shut our traps. Sorry?
The establishment always gets the benefit of the doubt. If there's any doubt about government officials...
Will, there is no benefit of the doubt, because if I put facts and you have opinions, then guess what prevails?
Well, they benefit to doubt you. They benefit...
No, I'm asking you. If you tell me that in your opinion the volcano is going to explode, and I said, you know what? What I'm concerned is about the fact that I'm sitting here in Taupo, you are whatever, in Auckland or somewhere else, and I can see rain now. Which prevails, the rain that I can see now, or your opinion about the volcano exploding? Now, the same thing happens
to the facts on the ground. Yeah.
Correct. So the facts. So this is what people say when people challenge the judge or anyone, a lawyer or anyone. Are these your findings of fact? Are these your conclusions at law? So then you nail them on the fact that they cannot provide you anything. Now, again, you know, I can go into all of these things separately, but I think that there are few problems. We tend to look at the society. A society is a political body. Instead of looking at the community, which is a conglomerate of men and women that they work together, as a commune, which means to commune, to communicate and to become one. And I think that I heard other people talking in the radio about the same issues. A community is what we have to focus. If we focus on the community, I can see that even my daughter's mother, when we were in court, she's not my enemy. She may have different ideas than me. That's fine. You understand? I don't have to bite into entering a war just because I've been invited by stupid lawyers. The same thing applies to what I said before. We have offspring, and I talked when every time that I had gone. I mean, I finished basically with the family court long ago, but finished in terms of not needing to go there anymore. But I'm saying, instead of talking about my daughter, you know, I could speak like some of other mates that I have. They speak about the child. What is the child? In the sense, there is all of these figments of imagination. They only occur in papers. The only child that exists is the name written on a paper. There is no child.
This is it. I mean, this is the reason why they don't address a community. This is the reason why these middlemen and vultures don't have any community ethic, because that doesn't give them leverage. That doesn't give them an advantage over their enemies, which are the rest of us. And you have to look at where they're coming from. The state has a motive to break up the family unit, and the lawyers have a motive to profit in the meantime. The whole idea of community goes out the window because this country is a corporation, just as most countries on this planet are.
But the problem is that when most people go to are confronted with a family court, in most cases, people have not done any of these readings. People do not understand what is a corporation. People do not understand that the main problem with this mechanism. This is something that I questioned a panel of people that I met in Auckland. I think it was in 2002 or 2003 when I first started with all of this nightmare. And I soon realized that there was a huge problem. How can it be that psychologists write 17 pages of nonsense? People that they have known as our family, they said, this is just completely outrageous. And on top of that, when I questioned the panel, then I said, who's responsible? And they said, what are you talking about responsible? Nobody's responsible. So I found from the very beginning, I found that there was a major problem. We men and women, we are born, and until we die, we have to accept full responsibility for everything that we do and every omission that we take when we know that we have to take action. We are responsible. We cannot avoid being responsible. It's part of our life. We cannot avoid it. Let me finish with this sentence. Their system, what I have seen is that they have, and they say it, and they write it. This is what I'm saying. It's not my opinion. These are the facts. The facts is that they act without, completely, with no liability whatsoever, or with limited liability in the best of cases. Take the case of John. Allegedly of the family key, allegedly acting as prime minister, coming and saying it's not my responsibility because of all the cars. I mean, you know, what kind of nonsense is that?
Responsible for this country being indebted. He's not responsible for anything, really.
They run a system, and the same applies to judges and lawyers and psychologists and counsel for child and counsel to assist and the whole array of court officers that... They run in a system in which they never are responsible for anything. So they will blame you. They will extricate you from your family. You will be removed from your nest. Your children, your offspring, to put it right, your offspring are going to be left destitute, and you won't be able to respond to that because they continue making fictional claims.
Indeedy duty. Our very special guest coming at us live from Taupo in New Zealand, our Kiwi collaborator for today, is Dario Ignacio on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back after the short break.
people wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Our very special Kiwi collaborator today is Dario Ignacio, joining us live from Taupo. Dario, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Vinny.
All right. Now, one thing that we were discussing over the break is how to actually beat the family court. I mean, I know, at least in some small part, I wouldn't say that I'm an expert, that it's quite the horrible experience for many people getting out there. And so many people get into the situation unable to get out of it, unable to get their kids back, and it's basically just a total nightmare. And you have had some success in this area of how to actually go about it. Would you please divulge for us what you've been doing?
Well, basically, from the very beginning, like everybody else, you are dragged into a courtroom. You are accused of all kinds of false accusations. You know that these accusations are false. Even if you have friends and family friends and relatives and people from the community that they can come and they can say, well, no, we know this guy, you know, and he's legit. You know, there's no problem whatsoever. In fact, we know, you know, his offspring and everybody's happy and, you know, everything okay. Then my experience and that of some of my mates is that the matter drags on and on and on. It's like a chewing gum. You know, because, I mean, you have to understand that, at least from my perception and what I have been researching, the problem with the family court is that it has been instituted in a certain fashion because according to the legislation, offspring become independent only by the time that they reach the age of 16. So this is a huge money-making machinery, because if you get into court when your son or your daughter is 2 years old, then the court and the lawyers that they are appointed, and they are never removed from a case, by the way, to the best of my research at least, they have an implicit ability to dig that back into the same problem until that particular boy or girl becomes 16. So this is a huge revenue. It's an endless pit, if you like. So what I found is that the issue that bothered me, and I tried to tackle it from the very beginning, was who is responsible for whatever they claim. I had a clear understanding of one of the maxims of law that says that he who makes the claim bears the burden of the proof. Now, this is not written in any part of the New Zealand legislation that I could find, at least, and I've been digging into that stuff for quite a long time. And every time that I go, that I went back to talk to any lawyers or any whatever court or whatever, then I basically went back to the same thing. You make a claim, you show me a proof. You don't want to agree with my political opinions, that's fine. Let's agree that we don't agree. End of a story. I don't think that anyone can be judged because of his political ideas or whatever it is. And what I said during the process of our family court issues, I said that parents need to be evaluated on their merits rather than on their demerits. Now, as you can probably understand, that breaks completely the presumption that we're all guilty, we're all criminals, we're all, you know, mass murderers, you know, all kinds of nonsense that they can fabricate. The problem is that in most cases, not only at the beginning I had reactions like that, but also most of my friends, they had the same thing. They throw something at you and then you come in and say, well, I need to defend myself, instead of coming and say, well, you make the accusation, show me the proof. Because of different problems that I experienced from the beginning, I went, at the time I was in a relationship, so to speak, with a certain solicitor, and I said to him, well, I think that what the Council for Child is doing is incorrect. I want him to be removed. I think that what the psychologist has written there, it's incorrect. I want her to be removed. These are my instructions to you. And what I recall is that he said to me, well, basically, you asking me to present documents to remove cancer for child because of whatever failures, etc., etc. And this is like removing the right hand of the court. And he said, and you asking me to remove the psychologist, and this is like removing the left hand of the court. So I was a little bit, you know, astonished about his response. And I said to him, well, but if the court is the one that instructs these people to work as officers of the court, then it's not my responsibility to solve their problems. Why do I have to bear the problems that they create? So based on these very simple points of reference from the beginning, this is how I decided to tackle the matter. So instead of going back to court with affidavits accusing my daughter's mother, I took the view that I will never say anything negative about her, no matter how much stuff I knew, because this is private. It's got nothing to do with the well-being of my daughter. So that's how I took it in my case. Now, that obviously opened a whole can of worms, because every time that I had a meeting, I kept on standing on the same facts that how is this going to help our daughter? And I used to use the word our on purpose, because it's not mine, it's not a position, you know. It's something that we both, her mom and I, we made it happen. Whether we believe in God or not, this is a separate issue. But I took it from the point of view that we're not dealing here with a chattel that we can just split and see who profits from it. Now, when I put these matters to other friends of mine, and they had much more difficult situations than I had at the time, they were faced with protection orders and all kinds of situations where they were completely removed from their families, then basically the approach was the same. And one of the things that I think I discussed that or I mentioned that to you earlier on, if someone is served to the protection order or whatever it is, where is a legislation that says that man or woman cannot send a little letter inviting the other party to come to a round table at the library or someone, have a cup of tea and discuss things amicably? What legislation can provide for the fact that you or I, we cannot do things positively in order to resolve any type of discrepancies or disagreements? So we have the power to go back to these, to the sources, call the other party, and if we cannot call them directly, use a third party entity like a friend or someone from the family, and try to unite again these two people, at least for the purpose of a sane conversation, instead of just leaving everything in the hands of lawyers that they only increase the problem. They only enlarge and expand, and until the whole thing turns into a total chaos and a total war. And obviously, nobody takes any notice of what really happens on a day-to-day basis to the boys and the girls, to the little ones that they are there, left without any recourse. Even in the cases of kids that they have made their views heard very clearly, when it was not along the lines of what was convenient for the production of these anti-family court industries machinery and you know the way that they work, then they were completely dismissed. As long as the kids came and said and you know voiced whatever they were brainwashed by one of the either by mom or by dad, then the court is happy because it keeps the whole war alive.
Well, you know, yeah. And this is the interesting thing, because it's somewhat vampirical as well, because in order to keep it alive, you've got to cause a lot of suffering, isn't it? You know?
Exactly.
One of the other elements was child trafficking through the family courts and stuff like this. And I know that this happens in the United States on a regular basis. For example, the prettiest children wind up going into foster care and get trafficked around and stuff of that nature. Do you see that happening here at all?
Well, I cannot give any opinion about that because, as I said before, I stick purely to the facts. If I have any particular communication with someone that requires some sort of guidance or assistance or whatever I can offer, that I'm always happy to do that. But I have never heard of anything about child trafficking as such. However, all of these atrocious systems that are in place, like CIFs, they are exactly that. They only they go there, they take action. I know of a certain, I cannot discuss cases that they're currently going because it's not appropriate, I think. But there are situations that I have, that I am aware of, where the kids, the little infants, whether they are babies or they are already older, they've just been pinched from the hands of mom and dad with all kinds of excuses. Now, if this is not child trafficking, then what is it? Because these people, these systems, these people that they see behind the desk, for them it's just a number. It's another one of these little numbers with a name on a piece of paper that is being moved from A to B. And like it happens in all commerce, and this is the nature of commerce, okay, is the polite way of making war, in other words. This is the problem. These people that they sit behind the desk, for them is how many numbers, how many pieces of papers they manage to push and shove and shovel from there to there.
Well, that's for a them, financial this incentive. This is a financial incentive correct. For child, youth, and family.
Correct. Yeah, but you see, the financial incentive is the problem, is an intrinsic part of the problem. If you think in terms of what is lawful, lawful addresses things that they are morally, ethically, and justifiably right. And if you're talking about the things that they are illegal, sorry,
We don't have a common law system based upon a moral framework as such. We don't have a constitution.
Let me put it this way.
Psychologists who judge people by some sort of yardstick, where the average person in this country, who I think is kind of insane and mental and not wholesome, is normal.
Well, Let me put it this way. They work according to a legal frame. Legal means that according to certain book of rules is okay. Who writes the book of rules? Nobody asks. The minute that you start challenging jurisdiction, you go to them and you say, can you please show me documentary evidence that you have jurisdiction to adjudicate in this matter? Then they have to show you jurisdiction. You understand what is jurisdiction? Jurisdiction is spoken oath. Where is your oath, my friend? I came to this room. I'm the only one that says who I am and under which system or parameters I stand. Nobody says what they are, who they are. For all I care, they can work for Back and Safe. How can they enforce the rules of Back and Safe on me?
because you know what I'm saying? Because when you're born in this country, you're given a corporate entity name and you are subservient to the corporation, the East India Trading Company, who runs this place. But you've willed yourself. Have you signed your driver's license?
I signed some document that was presented to me, and when I discovered that that whatever documents were incorrect, I'm not talking specifically about a driver's license or anything else, every time that you discover that something is incorrect, you have the right, you have the duty to yourself.
What I'm saying is what most New Zealanders are trapped in. Do you receive bills in the mail with your name in block capital letters saying you owe us $100-something for a power bill?
I am trying to address your question, Will. Now, let me say what I have seen. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that because if you receive a letter from the bank or from whoever, and the letter is written in all caps, I mean, we can discuss about that another time, about the all caps and what to do with it and how to resolve it. You have, same like in the family court, you have the ability to go back to them and say, I have noticed that there is an error here. Now, it is my duty to myself that I have to inform you that you have to correct your errors. Please correct your errors, and then I will address your matters, whatever it is the matters that you bring to me. And if they fail to address the matters, and if they fail to correct your name, because ultimately the only one that knows your name is you, no judge as a third-party entity, not me, not any one of your friends, not your dog, can tell you who you are. The only one that knows who you are is you. And or to extrapolate it better, the only one that truly knows what your name is if you come from a good family, I would say, is your mom and your dad who gave you your name. This is a gift that you were given. This is not some kind of benefit that some kind of illusory building called the government is offering you.
Well, then you must want to change the whole system like me then.
You don't have a benefit. Sorry?
Well, then you must be for a total overhaul of the system like me, because the whole idea of birth certificates being issued by a government department is the central problem right there, in a legal sense.
Well, but if you go back to them, people say,
we're coming out to break here, Dario.
Yes,
ladies and gentlemen, a very special guest coming at us live from Taupo is Dario Ignacio. We're talking about the family court and just basically how effed up the whole frickin' legal system is. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you proudly in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Breaking news, I have just been asked to become a YouTube partner, which is great because that's how George Fertitl manages to pay his rent and fuel, so I'm quite happy about that. Anyway, continuing on with our fabulous guest, Dario Ignacio, because, well, mate, it's intense, and unfortunately we only have this final short segment to go, so we basically just have to wrap up what we're going on about here. So I'd love it if you could continue talking, particularly about the police and how they sort of enforce the will of the family court.
Well, first of all, congrats on your new nomination for the YouTube and stuff like that. Oh, good. That's good. Second, I think the whole issue of the family court, my suggestion to many people is focus on the facts, not on the opinions. If you have a different opinion, if your ex has a different opinion, you have to respect that. You have to allow the other party to do whatever they want. People focus on two. I mean, I'm going to try to go quickly through a few things. The usual pretense of the family court is that you can have either shared custody, in which case, of course, everybody lives happily ever after, and the other option is to have sole custody. To be a custodian means to be a jail keeper. I don't keep my daughter in jail, so I'm not a custodian. You know, I'm not concerned with the terminology. The other thing is that there is something called parallel parenting, which is very effective. It allows each one of the moms, you know, mom or dad, to live their own life according to their own criteria, as long as, obviously, as we have to assume, as long as there is no real factual damage or any problems, okay? But there are ways out of this equation. Now, as I said before, there is a difference between focusing on the problems and constantly, you know, crying and moaning and focusing on the solutions. It is possible to go to all of these mechanisms and said, well, I understand that your job is to do X, Y, and Z. I'm not asking you for any favor. I'm just asking you to do your job. So if the document that you have issued, whether it is from a bank or the, doesn't matter what kind of corporate entity, comes with the wrong name, then you just have to go and tell them, well, since my name is this and this, please amend it. It is your job to amend the record, not my job. It's my job to inform you, and your job is to amend the record. Would you do that, please, for me? Would you, please? Would you, please? No, thank you very much. I don't need you in my life. That's it. You have confirmed by your own actions that it doesn't matter what is written in the legislation. Your actions supersede the legislation. Your actions show that you're incompetent in performing in your public office, in your public duty. If you have a public contract, which, of course, is demonstrable by the fact that you get a salary, then you have to perform, my friend. That's it. So there are a few things that people need to understand. The problem is, of course, most people, by the time that they learn all of these ins and outs of how the whole mechanism operates and the corporations and all that stuff, it's already long since they've lost access and contact with their own offspring. And that creates an enormous amount of problems, and is, you know, it's very difficult to reverse it. But with perseverance and with goodwill, you know, people do. I have seen several cases close to me. People have managed to first of all, feel about better with themselves, and then, of course, try to put it out to the community and to their own families. And slowly, they have managed to regain probably what they temporarily lost. So, as for what you said about police and all that, you know, again, it's the same thing. They are bound by common law. You can make common law prevail by stating, not to the cops, of course, because they are completely deaf to this type of discussion, but you can state, you know, I went to the family court and I said, I was challenged by someone that was there and said, oh yeah, you seem, by your documents, you seem to be criticizing the jurisdiction of the court. And I said, well, I don't have a problem with the court making a ruling as long as it conforms with UNCROC, United Nations Convention on the Rights of a Child. As long as it conforms with that and it doesn't contravene the United Nations Convention on the Rights of a Child, I'm happy, no problem. So you understand, you can put parameters. Now, coincidentally, I was the only idiot that mentioned UNCROC in that particular hearing or during the length of the whole process. And at the end of the day, when there was a decision made by the judge mentioned UNCROC. And judges, the only thing that they mention is whatever is being presented. The only law that applies to any court is whatever law that you bring in. So if you want to bring common law, you bring common law. If you want to bring admiralty and you are a slave to the system, then so be it. They are happy. The judge is not going to come and say, no, I think that you're doing, and he's not going to come and say to the lawyer, well, I think that you, what you're proposing is outrageous. You know, you're claiming too much. I will vouch for the defendant that, you know, that he, da, da, da. You know, this doesn't happen. The only law that applies in a court, from my experience, from what I've seen, from what I've heard, these are things that I've been present to, is the law that you bring in there. You don't bring it, end of story, you lose. Poof. So this is basically another thing that I suggest to people. Try to get one or two of your mates that they come with you as witnesses to any kind of intervention that you have. They can be your McKinsey friends. You don't have to ask for any permission or any approval from anybody to have counselors. You know, there are lots of things that people don't know because we just go into there and they say, no, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. Someone told me once, well, your friend cannot come as your McKinsey friend because of the way that he's dressed. You know, he should dress formally. And I said to that woman, doesn't matter, I'm not going to start giving names, of course. I said, well, can you show me, please, where it says, where is the legislation that says that you can discriminate against my friends because of the way that they are dressed? Now, that was the end of the conversation. There was the point was never raised again. Poof, end of the story.
I'll just finish in my view. I'll just finish in my point quickly that the average person just can't immerse themselves in this level of detail and can't immerse themselves in this level of dictate to come to these understandings, even about admiralty law versus corporate law. And we can't fight these battles on our own. We're up against a big system, okay? This country needs a leadership to take on the establishment that's grounded in some real principles where we can stand together as a united front.
This is called due diligence, Will.
Indeed. I'd like to thank you, Dario, for coming on the show with us today. It's
much
been a pleasure, mate.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Excellent. There he goes, Dario Ignacio. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to kick up a little bit more fuss about him, you can go to the archive section of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, where we will put up some links to his work as well. Thank you for listening. Hour number one is over. Hour number two is just over the hill. And we'll be right back after the short break with hour number two and another fabulous guest, Grace Hayden. Delete the virus, alert the masses. Okay, and welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, and also welcome to our very special guest coming us live from Auckland, Grace Hayden from verisure.co.nz. She is a ex-police prosecuting sergeant of 15 years, and after she did that, she went into verification, much like a private investigator, and she has some information for us today. Grace, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. How are things?
Oh, you know, pretty, actually really, really awesome. Much like the people in Christchurch, I'm a bit shaken, but in a good way.
Yes, but, I mean, it puts everything into perspective, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, yeah, and this is the difficulty with this situation, is it's the very first time that a national state of emergency has been declared. And a friend of mine asked on Facebook yesterday, what does the national state of emergency actually mean? You know, I mean, does that mean that, I don't know, there's a curfew or in Auckland or something like that? I mean, I don't know.
Well, they certainly haven't let us know what effect it has on us, but I'm sure the people in Christchurch would be very aware of the effect it's having on them.
Oh, totally, totally. My sister and her husband and little girl there, they're without power, without water. About 40% of the city is without any running water, and most people are without wastewater, so they're going to have to start digging latrines in their backyards, which is, you know, quite an interesting thing. And the roads are completely screwed up. It's pretty amazing down there. But on to your case. I mean, Grace, we've had you on the show before talking about how corrupt the police are and how corrupt the government is, and to many of our listeners, of course, I'm having one of the more intelligent audiences in talk radio. It's of no surprise, but to have somebody of your caliber, and we really loved having you on the last time. It's quite a rare opportunity, and we love to pick your brain, Grace, if I may say.
Great. Well, I've come to the conclusion of late that it's what we define as corruption. I have just recently heard about a company which is very high profile, is sharebroking, and I hear that they made their millions using insider trading and insider information. And I've sort of come to the conclusion that the reason New Zealand is the least corrupt is because our definition of corruption is so loose. It was interesting watching the TV program of signing of the Treaty of Waitangi, and here we are giving natives blankets and muskets in exchange for their signature, signing their lives away. Now, you have to go back and think, is that not bribery? You know, and the same as our Christmas hams, we deal with people who issue contracts by giving them Christmas hams, by giving them gifts. And there are things which we actually accept as being normal, which actually in the international field are considered corrupt, bribery and giving rewards to people who are employed in positions of control who shouldn't be receiving those rewards. So that's New Zealand. Everything we seem to do seems to stem from ignorance and arrogance. And I'm dealing with some interesting stuff at the moment with the Henderson Film Studios. Now, you have to wonder why a council gets involved in film production. But when you put all these things into a chronology, you find that the likes of Mayor Bob Harvey at the time was also a member of the Film Commission, and he knew all the handouts that were coming.
Well, hold on one second there, Grace. We've got a break coming up here. Grace Hayden, ladies and gentlemen, from verisure.co.nz is our very special guest for the final hour today, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo. But I'm here now.
This is Rose Hayden's theme song.
What you wanna do?
Hi.
Gangster.
How many dudes you really know?
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. One of our very special Kiwi collaborators today is Grace Hayden from Verisure.co.nz. That's Verisure.co.nz. Grace, welcome back.
Hi, thanks. Is I think just before the break, we were talking about the Auckland Film Studios, and it's something I've stumbled on alongside some of my colleagues. The unfortunate thing is that it's very unsafe in New Zealand to question what central and local government do, because they seem to think that they've got a license to do whatever they like with the ratepayers' money rather than use it for infrastructure. Yet when you question, you kind of end up being in court and being dealt to, rather than people sitting up and taking note that what you are questioning is in the public interest and could actually be, as in the case of many things that I suspect, is where groups of people have identified this wonderful pot of gold called the ratepayers' funds, and using it to make money for themselves while avoiding paying tax. So this is a little project I'm working on at the moment, and it's transpiring to be incredibly interesting. But that it also crosses over to another incident where I was questioning the Animal Welfare Institute of New Zealand, which is a law enforcement, or was a law enforcement authority up until middle of January this year, which didn't exist at all. And it was rather incredible that the person who was hiding behind this name had actually written the legislation himself, which enabled him to persuade the government that this impressive-sounding name actually had a presence in being a real entity. And this is where I find a lot of fraud occurs. It's not so much an identity fraud in me calling myself someone else who exists, but New Zealand prolifically uses trusts, and trusts are a legal fiction, and many of them are undiscoverable, and it seems to be the door wide open for all sorts of things, money laundering, and all sorts of corrupt behaviour, which is all done in the name of a trust, which really is just, could be anyone, could be no one. So this has been my own little project, is this whole verification of who we're actually dealing with. But no one in government or local government seems to want to know. They don't want to have procedures in place to ensure that they are contracting and dealing with real and identifiable people to whom they have a comeback. The kind of things that I sort of come up with are, for example, in 1996, the lawyer for Waitakere City Council, Graham Wakefield, set up a company which was just himself and his family called Waitakere Corporate Limited. Now, considering that Waitakere City Council had Waitakere Holding Limited and these things, it becomes very confusing. Was this lawyer working for the council? Was he working for his company? And we don't really know what he was doing in the name of that company and what he was doing on behalf of council. So the opportunity for these things are ginormous, but the Serious Fraud Office, of course, won't look at any of this stuff because, A, a fraud hasn't been proved, and, B, the amount, if there was any loss, hasn't been identified to hit their threshold. But you do have to wonder why, say, for example, if I was to work for Blogs the Builder, that I should then set up as an employee a company called Blogs Enterprises or something similar. It is very odd indeed. The other thing that comes up in my research are the same names all the way through, and the people who were involved in the Waitakere Enterprises, who were involved with the film studios, are now the same names that are cropping up with the development of the super city in Auckland. And again, they have got their noses in the trough of financial growth and are no doubt using the inside information to further their own business enterprises. No one seems to look at the stuff that's going on. We seem to be a nation that has an ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, and only when someone falls that we wheel the ambulance out. The problem is that so often it is a hearse, and I feel bad saying that this week in view of what's happened in Christchurch, but not everybody goes away in an ambulance. And this is what's happening to businesses all over New Zealand. It's what's happening to mum and dad's investment money, which these people who are gambling with are using very readily, but not informing people of the true risk. Of course, with my own company, I emphasise to people that you are the person who makes the decisions about you, and anything that pertains to you or anything that is a risk for you is something that you have to evaluate. No one else can do that for you. And if I am asking you to invest with me, then you better make certain that what I'm telling you is something that's fact, not fiction. There's an awful lot of fiction out there. And even we've found that these counsellors, many of them don't understand company structures. They don't know what a real person is or what a legal person is and what a trading name is. And it's in that field that we have a huge amount of misconceptions, and therefore things go off the rails. Another thing of interest that I'm working with at the moment is BP and its technology that it's using to stop petrol thefts. I'm now working for the gentleman who owns the patent, which has been kind of blatantly ignored. And the man who designed this back in the late 90s has missed out while they are still saving millions of dollars on the back of the technology which he put into a patent, and someone has possibly lifted from the patents office, developed and left him out of the loop. Of course, we don't call this kind of thing corruption in New Zealand. We call it just an oversight, and basically it's always the people who don't have the money who are left fighting the Goliaths, and it just doesn't pan out to be reasonable. So I'm all for alternative measures of getting people their rights, because certainly the average person cannot afford the $500 an hour for a lawyer to fight their battles for them.
It's the difficulty with these types of things is that the average person really, really does not have access to any type of defensive mechanism against any type of corruption or skullduggery that kind of goes on. And in my opinion, this kind of happens a fair amount, much more than the average person in the public would realise. Would you agree with that, Grace?
Well, the thing is that most people just can't even get to base one. They go and see a lawyer, they spend 2 hours with a lawyer, they get a bill of $1,000, and they soon realise that they can't afford to take this any further. And so effectively, people are dropped out of the process. It's a bit like gambling. If I play a game of a poker with someone and I have the best hand, but I can't put my hand on the table or get to see yours because I haven't got enough money, I still lose. And our court system is more akin to gambling than it is to people being able to have justice. And the processes that many corrupt lawyers use is a policy which is called Scorched Earth, and it's all about bankrupting the person who is taking them on in court or trying to defend themselves in court. And by bankrupting them, then they drop out of the picture and then they can say that they've had a victory. The thing a lot of people lose sight of is that when you do go to court, it is actually war. And in war, they use every dirty tactic conceivable, and lawyers have a raft of them. There are some very good lawyers, and we unfortunately have a whole lot of very corrupt lawyers. We're winning at all costs is the issue, and not a fair game.
And those are the types of lawyers that are referred to commonly as the good lawyers.
Well, yes, I mean... The ones
who are really good at what they do.
Yes. I'm going to destroy your reputation.
Seriously, it's like demonic possession out there. It's freaking biblical.
Talking about biblical, I went and saw True Grit last Saturday, and there was a beautiful quote there from the Psalms, and it was about the pursuing the offenders, and it's actually, I think it was Psalm 28.1, and it's actually worth a read in the whole context of bringing offenders to justice. And I'm not a biblical person generally, but it was certainly one that took my eye, and I thought, right, we need to do a little bit more of it, especially when it's lawyers.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, what was it? Where's the guillotines at is what I want to know.
Well, I think it's far worse that when a person who is supposed to be honest and upright isn't. When I joined the police many, many moons ago, we were told that, you know, when an ex-cop commits an offence, it's generally worse than if someone else was to commit the same offence. But nowadays it seems to be that we allow people to commit offences, and no matter who they are, the further up the food chain, the less penalty they have. And I call this the economics of crime, and you just need to look at the huge fraudsters and the amount of money that they get away with. I mean, if I embezzled several million dollars and got to spend 18 months in jail during a BA, then I think that that's actually good value for money. A, you've saved your university fees. B, you've saved accommodation. And C, you've made a lot of money that you've stashed on the side and they haven't recovered. But on the other hand, we take people to court for traffic incidents and things they haven't committed, and they're left defending it, knowing full well that to engage a lawyer is going to be more than what the penalty is worth. It's all back to front.
Psalm 28.1 is in reference to people who basically remain silent in the face of needing to tell the truth. That was what you're referring to, but that basically the people who know about the truth and don't voice it will join the rest in the bottomless pit. That's pretty much what 28.1's referring to. But yeah, I mean, to me, I mean, when you have a system that the average person can't understand, I see it from two points of view. I see we have to somehow, I don't think this is done by, once again, I don't think this is the role of government. I think this is just the role of government keeping out of people's lives. Somehow we raise the bar and we raise the education level of society. And at the other end of the scale, we reduce the complexity of government and the whole legal system. But that would require a full-scale revolution and getting off this Commonwealth structure and forming our own republic. But I mean, that's the way I see it. We need to decomplexify the realities in the legal system, at the same time raise the bar, or raise the involvement of the average person, raise the responsibilities of the average person in terms of, you know, their civic duties and understandings.
Well, it's actually quite funny. A friend of mine says most of the Commonwealth use the Westminster system, but in New Zealand we use the Axminster system. We have the carpet and we sweep everything under it. And any good housewife will tell you that bulge in the carpet is going to continue to grow until someone stumbles over it one day and it will spill out the sides. And I actually think it's starting to spill now. There's a lot of things which are coming out. And, you know, we've got government doing token things, but we have a problem whereby we say we've got people who deal with issues, but that poor person might be one person and they've got files between the floor and the ceiling and no time to get on with them. We need resources so people can properly address all these injustices, because they're stacking up now, and instead of dealing with them, they look at ways of getting rid of them and what's generally called writing off offences and writing off things to make the load manageable. And in a way, you can't blame them, but it doesn't solve the problem, because the only way you get to deal with corruption is by hanging one or two out to dry, so that the next person will think, oh my God, that the consequence of telling a lie in court, the consequence of doing this is so great, I'm not going to take the risk.
Well, I mean, we touched on this with our previous guest, you know, the system always claims to be acting in the public good, acting in the good of the average person. And then they say, well, we're going to make an example of this person. I mean, how many times do we hear that? The local, whether it's local police or the upper echelons of authority, always wanting to make examples of other people as if to infer, to implicate that they are the standard of good and righteousness.
But the example is probably that, look, this just shows that we are doing something with it. And in the case of some politicians who have been sent to jail, it's probably sort of say, hey, we wanted to get rid of this guy, so we've hung him out to dry. So we've done, you know, we've done ourselves a favour while also telling the rest of the public that, hey, we're not going to tolerate this. Yet at the same time, they allow others to get away with so much more. But because they can point at that other example, they'll say, see, we are doing something. When it's all about what they want you to see and not about what the reality is. They are concealing a lot more than what they expose. And it's not until the people of New Zealand get angry enough that we're not going to get a commission against corruption, because we really need an independent authority that sits across all government departments and deals with things. And there's got to be not a threshold of proof of offending, but stuff which is proactive, which shows companies that are being registered for overseas scams by accountants, by, you know, hitting people hard but not complying with simple rules. The same way as you and I are being held accountable for going over 60 or over 50, for parking 5 minutes too long. Yet there are people who do big things and get away with it.
Well, you know, and I think that's probably one of the interesting things about our upside-down, topsy-turvy society is what's right is wrong, what's wrong is right, and what's just and honest is now corrupt and debauched. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special Kiwi collaborator is Grace Hayden, coming us live from Auckland, and we'll be right back.
What is about is something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
That's what it is. Bribery and corruption and slithering, slimy, scumbag politicians are a perennial problem. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we have the roundup for these weeds. Our very special guest is Grace Hayden, coming to us live from Auckland, from veryshore.co.nz. Grace, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back. Yes, it's interesting how we have politicians who don't understand corruption and they don't want to know. Penny, a good friend of mine, is just Penny Bright, questioned the Prime Minister on what state capture is. Now, state capture is internationally renowned as a form of corruption whereby companies engage with the government and use the government's resources, intellect and assistance to further their own purposes. Now, what we've seen with the Auckland Super City is that the poor old residents of Auckland think that they have voted in the council, but they are just the pawns. We've got a few people there that have put their hands up and have been there in the past and got a good report or goodness knows what else. But these people are not really representing the constituents. They are all representing big business. Because the reality with our new super city is that we had these committees appointed way before we even went to the polls. And these committees are the ones who are deciding what infrastructure we're going to privatise and sell off and what we're going to keep. Now, I've done some interesting research and found that the people who are most closely connected with the water industry are those who are also connected with the liquor industry. Now, you've got to ask yourself, who in the world would want to buy our beautiful, clean and green water from New Zealand while we drink the sludge out of the Waikato River, which has goodness knows what in it. And it's all about taking whatever was good for the public, what the public owned, and on selling it, not to local businesses, but to international businesses. I did a check this week on Contact Energy. Now, Contact Energy is almost 50% owned by overseas companies. And we are selling our resources off, and because things get privatised and sold off into companies that then sell off their shares, before you know it, we have completely sold off our country. And there won't be much left for New Zealanders to have here. And every cent that we earn will be going into multinationals' coffers and be taken offshore. So New Zealand's on the slippery slope of bankruptcy, and unfortunately events like in the last week of Christchurch will ensure that we are going to continue down that path. Now, the implication for the average Kiwi on that is that we are going to be looking at bankrupting a few more people, because if we can move them out of their houses and put their houses on the market for a mortgagee sale, then we will be recovering a little bit of money here, there and everywhere. And you just need to go into the High Court and pick up a little card that says, have trouble paying your accounts? See us for our insolvency services. They're actually welcoming and actually encouraging people to write off their debts by becoming insolvent. Were you aware of that, were you, Vinnie?
Well, you can just write off all debts that you've got by becoming insolvent.
But they make that service available now.
Well, you know, that's interesting because there's somebody I was talking to this morning about getting out of Christchurch, and he said it'd be real difficult because he still owes a whole lot of money on his car and all that kind of stuff, wouldn't be able to sell it. So, yeah, I mean, that would be an interesting idea, actually, if you just register for insolvency to get rid of your debt so you can actually become more mobile. Because one of the elements of debt that I find particularly interesting, especially in the United States, is that your debt holds you where you are. You know, in the United States, I believe, and our producer can probably comment on this, that if you have a mortgage or debts or something like that in the United States, you are not allowed to leave the country or migrate elsewhere for a certain period of time or something along those lines.
You see, of course, that
should stop John Key from traveling.
No. He got the rest of the world in debt. He's the only one that isn't. Well, you know, this is the thing about our frickin' Prime Minister. I mean, people don't know much about his past. I mean, he says, oh, I was a currency trader for a short period of time. Well, actually, you were a derivatives bubble blower-upper, you scumbag. You know, the 2008 financial crisis, John Key played no small role in that. He certainly was one of the top brass scumbags of Merrill Lynch on the board of the Federal Reserve, which facilitated the derivatives bubble, which destroyed the global economy. And there is still currently $1.4 quadrillion, that's $1,400 trillion, worth of derivatives still sitting there that needs to be paid off because they just made all this crap out of thin air. It's unbelievable.
And now thanks to these garbage, if you want to go to the other scumbags, you know, your local bank, to buy a house, to get a mortgage, instead of less than a 5% deposit, now you need 15 to 20%. They only want to give 80% loans. And they'll go through all your records and all, and just, you know what I mean? It's so much harder now for the average person to get in the housing market, so we end up with a society of landlords and slave scum. And then, you know.
But of course, you realise that this best way to be is to be bankrupt, because that way no one pursues you for your assets. The minute you have an asset, someone will be chasing you so that they can take it away from you. This is what the name of the game is in New Zealand now, especially, you know, our houses have gone up so much in value over the years that people have become targets.
And, don't you think we'll still be able to have assets, though, in an ideal world? I mean, we shouldn't have to run from these people just because they're criminals, you know?
But the thing is, if you have assets, you need to keep those assets in a trust, just the same as they have, so that no one knows what your assets are and where they are. You've got to play. People at the bottom have to play the game the same as the ones at the top do. We have to be playing smarter. Otherwise, you're going to lose everything. I've stumbled on a really wonderful idea, which I would love to see work, is the way that they run companies. Like there is a company in Hamilton, which was Well Electric, which changed its name to Well Networks, which used to be Waikato Electricity. Now, each one of those three names is now a company in its own right, and it's had the names of the other two. So imagine if you were to line up with a couple of your mates and all go in there and change your names so that John became Trevor and Trevor became Bruce, and next year you sort of switched around again. Can you imagine the mess you could make with identity crisis out there? It'd be rather a fun thing to do when it comes to traffic tickets and things like that, because you can say, no, I wasn't John Smith last year, I was John Smith the year before, and I'm now Bruce Simpson. You know, it's quite funny. This is what they do with companies, and that's how they avoid liability.
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed, companies, when they're massively in trouble in New Zealand and such like this, they just change their names and then move offshore, and then they get away with it.
Yes. Or they just change shareholders. And I don't really know if anyone actually checks on companies when they, like this week I had to get some stuff from overseas, and I looked at the company, and it had been set up in New Zealand by an accountant, and now the two directors live in Denmark, and the shareholders live in Denmark. and they've only got some accountant's office here in New Zealand. So who do you get accountability from? Where do you get accountability from? And how do you really sue a company like that? Because if you sue a company like that, they'll just sort of drop off the face of the earth. Because what jurisdiction have you got over a Norwegian back in New Zealand?
Yeah, it's like trying to fight a legal battle with a frickin' ghost.
Yes. But, you know, it's the safest way to be is to be represented by something legal, which is sort of, it's only a legal fiction because there is no one properly answerable about that company. And this is how we work in New Zealand, and that's why New Zealand is going to be very rapidly the most corrupt country in this world. Similarly, this week I was really annoyed with the lady from Amnesty International. I spoke to her about a young girl who'd been abducted. She's only 17 years of age and she's being put into prostitution. And I said, surely that'd be a breach of human rights. But somehow we prefer to look to the rest of the world and feel like we have to save some poor soul in India without sort of thinking, hey, we've got kids and people in New Zealand who have got human rights issues which are being violated, which no one is addressing, and government's going to address.
You're taking it right out of my mouth, Grace. I mean, I can't tell you just how much I despise these little soft wits who go around wanting to help Africa and Asia and stuff. I mean, it sounds mean. But you try and tell them, we've got serious economic woes here. We've got thousands of people in Auckland alone who are just, you know, stuffed. Who are stuffed before the crap really hits the fan.
Yeah.
And then who knows what's going to happen. And yet they feel that for credibility's sake, they need to go to Uganda to help people build a damn shack somewhere, and these people have been doing it for centuries. If we just kept out of the business, they'll be fine. And yet, in our own westernized society, where we do have this spread of income, shall we say, this inequality, we do have this system. We don't have dependence on the land. There are some people who really need, you know, some basic essentials of life. They are totally ignored.
Yeah, I mean, the African continent has the same problem that the rest of the world does, and that's massive loan sharking extortion via the World Bank and IMF, who just come in, steal your assets, steal your resources, subvert your democracy. Well, I don't really believe in democracy myself. But you know, this is the grand thing. I mean, we've all got the same frickin' enemy here, and what all these little socialite frickin' groups want to do is they just want to nitpick, you know, and I say, man, if you want to pick nits, go and live with a pack of orangutans, you know.
Don't
just bother, you know, messing around, messing with little tiny issues that are basically irrelevant over the grand scheme of things. Why don't you just go to the root of the problem? I mean, if you've got an enormous tree in your front yard that's got all over the place and is digging up your foundations and all of that kind of stuff, you cut that tree down, okay? You don't prune the leaves.
Oh, yeah, that's what they do. I mean, and look, they'll talk about Africa and they'll set up straw man arguments and they'll say, well, don't you care about, you know, genital mutilation? Don't you care about how they treat women over there? Don't you care about this, that, and the other? We want a democratic system for them so they can elect, you know. I mean, look, they're a tribal people. They've had the system set up, and sure, it's men running everything. It's the same in the West, the old boys' clubs. You know what I mean? You can't avoid that. it's just the nature of people. We can't go in there and put some synthetic, artificial boundary in place without huge problems, as in their economic woes, and end up with countries like Zimbabwe. It's horrible. Yes. It's just left these countries alone.
Well, the thing is, I was amused at the time I was doing my police studies. They gave you the example of the Zulu, the hunter-gatherer tribe people who were quite happy living where they were living. They had everything that, you know, they needed to survive. And then men decided they were going to, or the white people decided they were going to bring out the diamonds and all the other bits and pieces. So suddenly they imposed things like taxes and bits and pieces, which bring these people into the financial situation where they now have to work and contribute in dollars. which means they have to sort of work the mines, and it take it away from their lifestyle. But, you know, I've often said, like, I go to Samoa quite often, and I'd say Samoa is the richest country in the world. They get a tsunami through there, they get an hurricane through there, they've got their coconut trees, and they get
Yep. It's a terrible, terrible thingy. It's like the whole world has turned into some description of natural disaster. Naturally. You're listening to the Finney Eastwood Show, where we're all about disaster. And speaking of which, we'll come back with some more radio disastrousness after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Final segment of the day, our very special Kiwi collaborator, Grace Hayden from verisure.co.nz, joins us for this final segment here. Grace, welcome back.
I, you know, something else that's really irked me of late is the way we use charities. You know, we were talking about Africa, and I've always sort of said, have a little starving child and show it to the world, and people will open their wallets. But the same thing happens with the RNZ SPCA and the SPCAs worldwide. These organisations get huge sums of money. They get government funding. They also have people leave their entire properties, bequests and all sorts of things. And what is rather amusing is that they move them into trusts. And then they open the books and say, look, we don't have much money. And what they've done lately is they've introduced a no-kill policy. So we've had a lot of outgoing funds on keeping all these cats alive. Now, I'm a cat lover, but some cats, quite honestly, you've got to be insane to want to have. Some cats, some people are not nice.
Well, so, you know, and this is an interesting thing, because I actually, we did lose a cat once, and we had to go to the SPCA to get him back. Incidentally, they found him a couple of days later after going missing, and went in there, and my goodness, did it smell bad. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was when we went out and they said, and we just need you to make a small donation, you know. Okay, well, will we get our cat back if we don't make the donation? They go, no. And I say, well, how is that a donation if you're forcing me to do it and holding my cat hostage? And this small donation was like $70.
Yes, and then chances
are... Yeah, I mean, my school was like that, compulsory donations. State school.
Schools are. But the chances are that you could have got your cat back, and then the next week you had to go off to the vets because your cat probably had snuffles, because every cat that comes from the SPCA seems to come out with snuffles. I think it's a way of keeping vets employed. But what put me on to that is that in Waikato, the mayor is also the head of the SPCA, and she was going to ask the ratepayers to contribute something like 89 cents a year to the SPCA. So what we're going to do is we're going to amalgamate councils with these kind of organisations, and it's only another cent, it's only another dollar, it's another something, but people are paying for things which are not infrastructure. They are paying for other things which get funding elsewhere. And, you know, where do we draw the line?
Well, you know, and this is the difficulty, is that these so-called non-profit organisations and so-called charitable organisations, they're all tying in with government, and they're basically becoming like pseudo-government departments, and they're getting government funding and all of this kind of jazz. And, you know, they're supposed to be voluntary, they're supposed to be donationary or whatever the hell the word is, but they're just not, all right? Not in any sense of the word are they charitable. Not in any sense of the word do they really even get any jack done. I mean, what was it with Christian's Children Fund, for example? I'm not ragging on Christians here, far from it. They spend close to 90% of their donations, I heard from one source, on advertisements to get more donations.
Yes. And the funny thing is that we give out money, like I've got an organisation I've been looking at, that the Ministry of Health have given $140,000 a year to, when for 3 or 4 years it didn't even exist. And they just have people fronting it who are there taking the money. And at the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Labour, they're all the same. The people who are in charge of giving the money out just want to tick the boxes and don't anyone dare ask, because it could be a reflection on the person handing out the money. They're not doing their processes properly. And it's all about covering arse and dishing out money. Now, we could have so much more money in this country if we actually gave it to competent people to do the job that the money was given for. But it just seems to be a whole society just dishes out money and says, fine, it's gone. These people will
do it. Well, you know my answer to that. My answer to that is we could have a whole lot of money in this country, more money, meaning more money of real buying power, if we minted our own currency and had our own reserve bank and it worked for the state and was owned by the people.
Yes.
Because if we had money, if we have money that serves people, money minted by the state, owned by the people, rather than money minted by some foreign bankers making us slaves to them and their currency, if we're slaves to ourselves, you know, money would serve us.
Yes.
Instead, we end up having to pay $11 back for every 10. It's impossible. you know.
But we've abducted our whole society. As I said earlier, we vote government, we vote the local government, but in reality, the government and local government are in bed with businesses. They are not there to represent the people. Did you know that we've got ministers of parliament who are assigned to multinational companies? Now, you can't even get in to see your local MP. I haven't been able to see Rodney Hyde in the last 3 years. He's decided I'm a conflict of interest.
How is that?
She's looking for transparency and honesty, that's why. Guys, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. The website, ladies and gentlemen, is verisure.co.nz. That's verisure.co.nz. Thanks for coming on, love.
Not a problem. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, you know, it's been a pretty interesting show today. And, you know, one thing I'd like to do before we go is just have 10 seconds of silence for the people of Christchurch. And also, heart goes out to all those people who have lost loved ones down there. And we certainly hope that the rescue efforts are not hampered and that the recovery is swift and that people can get their lives back on the rails again. And the Mayor Bob Harvey is recommending that people, well, did recommend to people, to leave the city in the meantime if you have other places to go, to lessen the strain on the already damaged infrastructure. You've been listening to another fabulous edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. You can have a look at the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, including our very special interview that we did yesterday with Stan Deo. We'll see you tomorrow.